Here is your theater of romance from Hollywood. Colgate tooth powder for a breath that's sweet and Halo shampoo to glorify your hair bring you Robert Taylor, star of Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer Studios, producers of They Were Expendable. Colgate tooth powder for a breath that's sweet and Halo shampoo to glorify your hair. Present the Colgate Halo Theater of Romance from Hollywood. Tonight, we give a warm welcome to Robert Taylor, recently an officer in the United States Navy, today, again, a star of Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer. Mr. Taylor has chosen the Lloyd C. Douglas great universal story, Magnificent Obsession. Here is your play, and here is your star, Robert Taylor.
I don't imagine there were very many people who hadn't heard of Dr. Wayne Hudson. He was a great brain surgeon, a great philanthropist, and a great guy. We never met, but he was responsible for the beginning of my life. And I was responsible for the end of his. To go back to those dark beginnings, you have to go back to a gray, murky morning when I awoke and found myself in a Brightwood hospital. So bound together with aches and bruises, I couldn't tell where one left off and the other began. I lay there trying to grope my way back through the pain and remember what had happened to me. But all I could remember was someone saying, "Have another drink, Bobby." While I was struggling with this, I heard voices just outside my door. One I recognized as Nancy Ashford, the head nurse, but the other was completely strange.
It's been a great shock to all of us.
How is the Merrick boy, Nancy?
He's still unconscious, Mrs. Hudson, but there's no danger of pneumonia now. He's going to pull through.
I wish I could say I'm glad. But every time I stop to think that if it wasn't for him, Wayne would be alive.
I know. He's a drunken, good-for-nothing boy with nothing to do but wallow in his millions, and I'm sorry, I shouldn't have said that. But I love Dr. Hudson, too. We all did. I'm sorry, I shouldn't have said that.
I lay there listening, and the words clawed at my mind and ripped at my guts. And suddenly I was shouting, "Mrs. Ashford! Mrs. Ashford! Mrs. Ashford!"
Yes, Mr. Merrick. What on earth is wrong?
What am I doing here? What's happened to me?
You've had an accident. You're going to be all right. You must be quiet. You disturbed the other patients.
I'm sorry. I must have had a nightmare. I dreamt I heard you talking. Dr. Hudson isn't dead, is he? He's here at the hospital, isn't he?
You must lie back and rest. You've been very ill.
Answer me.
No, Mr. Merrick. Dr. Hudson isn't here. You heard correctly. He is dead.
What happened to him?
He drowned. We could have saved him if we had had the full motor, but that was across the lake.
You were using it on me?
Yes, we were using it on you.
I can see that I'm not going to be any popularity kid around here. It was my fault, of course. I asked to have the full motor. I asked to have my life saved.
No, it wasn't actually your fault. Although if you had been sober, you might have been able to sail your boat without falling off it. But it is true and logical that you didn't ask to be saved.
It's a darn shame the wrong guy had to go, isn't it? Isn't it? He's dead and I'm alive. We're both out of luck. I left the hospital a few days after that. I walked out the door that Dr. Hudson had so often walked in, into a world of confusion and agonies and self-reproach. I don't know how I passed the next few weeks. All I remember is that I walked day after day, night after night across the Connecticut countryside, haunted by a man I'd never known. And then one night I met a girl. Her car was stuck in a ditch and she hailed me.
"Hello there. Could you help me a moment? I seem to be stuck."
"You certainly do. You're lucky you didn't turn over. You might have been badly hurt."
"What do you think I can do? Are there any farmhouses nearby? Perhaps I could telephone for help."
"Well, I don't know, really, but I'm sure there must be. Come on, we'll go hunt for one. You can't sit there by yourself this late at night." We found a house not far down the road. It belonged to a sculptor named Randolph. He phoned for help, and we sat alone before his fire, warming our hands and our hearts. And for a while, I forgot it was at peace. Sitting there with her was like sitting in a church, listening to music.
"You've been
very kind, and I certainly won't forget it. I know I've been no end of trouble.
Oh, no, you haven't been any trouble at all. For an hour, you've had me almost believing I was happy.
Aren't you?
Is anyone?
You're very young to ask a question like that.
How about you? Are you happy?
Not really. Not right now. But I was happy, and I will be happy again. I don't believe that anyone has a right to brood over grief until it shadows his whole life.
Well, that's easy to say. Suppose you found it impossible to escape. Suppose the shadow became so big you didn't even want to live anymore.
A strong person doesn't let that happen. You have to be able to conquer sorrow if you're going to live it all in this world. Why are you smiling at me like that?
I was thinking that probably you know very little about real sorrow. I was thinking that you're very young to say a thing like that.
The car's fixed. It's out in front now.
Oh, thank you very much.
Certainly is a peach of a car. It looks just like the Packard Dr. Hudson used to drive around here.
It is. I'm Mrs. Hudson.
Oh.
Good night, and thank you so much for your kindness. You're coming with me, aren't you?
No, I think I'll just say goodnight here, if you don't mind, Miss Hudson.
Can I give you a lift somewhere?
No, I don't think we're going in the same direction.
Oh, I'll be glad to take you any place you want to go.
No, thank you. That won't be necessary. Good night.
Good night. Good night, Mr.
Randolph.
Good night, Mr. Randolph. Oh, how silly of me. You haven't told me your name.
No, I haven't, have I? Well, the name's Merrick, Mrs. Hudson. Bobby Merrick. You still want to give me a lift now?
Good night, Mr. Merrick.
So, you're Bobby Merrick.
Yeah.
Dr. Hudson was a close friend of mine. Oh, don't go. I'd like to have a talk with him.
I'm sorry. I'm not in the mood for talking. I'm a little tired.
Oh, I won't keep you but a few minutes. But I think you should know a little about Dr. Hudson and an obsession of his. I say obsession, but I must add it was a magnificent obsession. You know, when I first knew the doctor, I was an ordinary stonecutter. But now, thanks to him, I'm a sculptor.
What did Dr. Hudson have to do with it?
He taught me how to make contact with the source of infinite power.
What?
Oh, don't look like that. I am not crazy. The philosophy involved is as old as the most sacred book in the world.
Oh, well, I'm afraid I don't know very much about religion.
Well, it was Christ who originated the science of generating human power, and so successfully did he practice it that he's more alive today than he was over 1,900 years ago. And once you establish contact with that power, you can fulfill your destiny.
Sounds a little confusing.
No, it's not. All you do is go out, find people who need help, and give them help. And whatever help you give them must be in absolute secrecy. You must never let anybody repay you. You know, Dr. Hudson lived almost his entire life with that creed. If you live by it, that might be a way of squaring things a bit. I think if I were you and felt the way you do, Merrick, I'd do everything I could to fill the spot Dr. Hudson left empty.
So I accepted a doctrine and a creed, and then finally a profession. Mrs. Ashford, I came to see you because I want your help.
My help? You're fully recovered, Mr. Merrick. What on earth can Brightwood Hospital or I do for you?
I've decided to become a surgeon, Mrs. Ashford. That is, if I can make the grade.
You? A surgeon?
Yes. A brain surgeon.
And just what brought you to that conclusion?
You might say it was religion, you might say it was conscience, you might say it was Helen Hudson. That's what I'm going to do, and I'm going to need your advice and your friendship. That's not too much to ask.
You've got them both. By the way, have you seen Mrs. Hudson recently?
No, not recently.
She's downstairs now trying to hail a cab.
Downstairs?
Mm. They'll be hard to get in this rain. Why don't you offer her a ride home?
Hello, Mrs. Hudson.
Good afternoon, Mr. Merrick.
Mrs. Ashford told me you were waiting for a cab. I thought I might offer you a ride home.
Thank you. I would prefer a cab. If you'll excuse me, I think I'll try my luck on the other side of the street.
All right, I'll see you across.
That won't be necessary, Mr. Merrick. Please, don't trouble yourself.
Please let me talk to you for a moment.
Will you kindly stop following me? I don't want to talk to you. I don't even want to look at you.
Helen! Helen, look out!
Dr. Ramsey says she's going to live.
Thank God for that.
There's a fracture involving the occipital lobe of the brain. He says he's afraid she'll never see again.
No, No, I don't believe it. I don't believe it.
Have you any idea at all what these specialists are going to charge you? As your lawyer, I want to talk...
All I'm interested in is whether they'll examine Mrs. Hudson.
Oh, five of them agreed to meet in Paris for curfew.
Good. Now, how about her stocks and bonds? You checked on them.
They aren't worth the paper they're printed on.
All right, I want you to replace her bad stocks and bonds with some of my good ones.
As your lawyer...
She must have a steady income. You'll have to arrange it somehow. And Hastings, I want you to promise that you'll never say a word about this to anyone. During the months that followed, I saw Helen every day, although she didn't realize it. Her maid would take her across the street and leave her sitting in the park. I planned my studies so that I could be there at the same time. And then one day, her maid was late and I offered to see her across the street. In that manner, Helen Hudson and I became acquainted again.
Thank you so much, Mr.
Robert.
Oh, Mr. Robert. Were you ever by any chance connected with Brightwood Hospital?
No, but I'd like to be someday. I'm studying medicine. Why did you ask?
Your voice seemed so familiar that I thought perhaps I'd met you there. But evidently I was mistaken. Thank you so much for helping me, Mr. Robert.
Goodbye. I'll see you in the park tomorrow.
I'll be there. I'm there every day.
Well, I'll be waiting for you. Hello, Nancy.
Bob, what on earth are you doing sitting in my office in the dark?
Oh, thinking a little, praying a little, I guess. Helen's sailing for Paris tomorrow for a consultation. I just left her. She's very frightened. She hasn't said so, but I can tell.
You love her very much, don't you?
Love her? Oh, Nancy. To me, she's everything a woman could be or should be. Love her. Little word. I worship her. I adore her. Nancy, you shouldn't have asked. I know so well how hopeless the whole thing is. If her sight is restored, I can never see her again. She must never know who I am.
You know, I had an idea you'd be in Paris for that consultation.
They're going to phone me as soon as they know. If it's not a success, I'm going over by the first plane. She'll need me then.
You know, Dr. Merrick, seems to me it's about time someone told you you're a heck of a nice guy.
Here is a young lady asking for the chance to fill an important secretarial job.
Well, Mr. Jackson, now that Miss Martin is leaving to be married, I wish you'd try me as your secretary.
I'm very sorry, Miss Lewis, but I've just hired another young lady.
But, Mr. Jackson, I thought you'd give me a chance. I know I can take your dictation.
The complication is not dictation. It's a little breath of trouble. I mean unpleasing breath. Yes, that's why this young lady is losing out. It certainly is a case for Colgate tooth powder. You see, anyone can be the victim of unpleasing breath. It happens to thousands without their knowing, marks them down socially, brings them unhappiness, and they seldom suspect the real reason. Don't let that breath of trouble catch up with you. Do this. Brush your teeth night and morning and before every date with Colgate tooth powder. For Colgate tooth powder cleans your breath as it cleans your teeth. Yes, scientific tests prove that Colgate tooth powder in 7 cases out of 10 instantly stops unpleasing breath that originates in the mouth. And when it comes to cleansing, money can't buy a dentist that will clean your teeth better or quicker than Colgate tooth powder. Remember the name, Colgate tooth powder, with the accent on powder. Colgate tooth powder and Halo shampoo bring you the second act of Magnificent Obsession, starring Robert Taylor.
Hello, Helen. It's me, Dr. Robert.
Dr. Robert. Oh, I can't believe it. Come in.
Forgive me for dropping in on you like this without calling first, but...
What are you doing in Paris?
I came to see you.
You knew I needed you.
Yes, at least I hope you'd want to see me.
You know, then, that I'm not going to see you again.
No, don't say that. You're going to see with my eyes. Helen, you once said that we were friends. Would you really let me be your eyes and your hands and whatever you need? I've nothing else to do the whole rest of my life but help you see whatever you want to see. Will you?
You're very sweet and very kind. I couldn't be that kind of a burden to you.
Burden? Don't you understand? Don't you know how I feel? Don't say no until you've thought about it. Come on now, put on your prettiest dress and let's forget about consultations and all doctors except me. I'm not much of one, you know. And let's go out and have a look at Paris.
You know, I actually can't remember the last time I went dancing. Are there many people here?
Oh, yes, yes, hundreds of people, and not one girl in the room as lovely as you. How about another ride on the carousel?
Oh, not for a while. Still dizzy from the last one.
Hey, there's a sword swallower over there. Let's have a look at him, huh?
Is he swallowing it?
Yep, there it goes.
Isn't that wonderful?
Not nearly so wonderful as hearing you laugh.
Where are we now?
On top of a hill, looking down on Paris. There's a man over there on a bench singing to his girl.
I love that song. What else is there to see?
Well, where you stand, my lady, you have Paris at your feet and heaven at your fingertips. If you stood on your tiptoes and stretched real hard, you just might touch a star.
Really? I'll tell you something. This has been the happiest evening I've ever spent in my whole life.
And the happiest evening I've ever spent.
You know, all evening I've been waiting for you to say something. I thought surely you'd tell me tonight.
Tell you what?
How long are you going on pretending? You must know how much I've come to think of you, Dr. Merrick.
You've known?
Since the first day when you helped me cross the street.
Then you have forgiven me.
Forgiven you? Oh, my dear, I've come to love you so very much. There's not even any question of forgiveness.
Helen. Oh, my darling, my darling. Will you marry me? Will you please marry me?
I'll give you my answer in the morning.
She was gone in the morning. She left my answer in a note. She said that she couldn't bear the thought of shadowing my life with her tragedy, that people would pity me because of her. She said not to try to find her because that would only make the whole thing harder. And believed that I would always be most dear to her, so she left. I spent the years that followed hard at work. I had only my profession to live with and to live for, and I gave it all the study and energy that I had to give. And in time, I assumed the position Dr. Hudson had at Brightwood and knew at last the grateful satisfaction that I was carrying on his work. It was at Brightwood that Mr. Randolph came to see me.
I'm afraid you don't remember me, Dr. Merrick.
Of course I do. The stonecutter. The man with a theory.
That's right.
Dr. Hudson's magnificent obsession.
Isn't it an obsession with you by this time, Dr. Merrick?
Well,
You've become a great doctor at a very young age, given with real generosity, founded clinics, donated to medical research.
I didn't do that to better myself in any way.
Oh?
No. I did it for one person. A woman I cared a great deal for and lost.
I see.
She needed the kind of help that doctors can give. Everything I've done was done indirectly for her, hoping that she might be one of those helped somewhere without my knowledge. You see, I don't even know where she is.
Dr. Merrick, what I've actually come to see about is this. Not long ago, I was called down to Virginia to select marble for some restoration work going on down there, and while I was there, I happened on a very unfortunate case, but one that links us together again quite logically.
In what way?
Well, this case affords us the opportunity to complete a circle. The knowledge that I pass on to you was given to me by someone very close to a woman who is now blind. She's Mrs. Hudson.
Helen?
Yes. She needs you, Dr. Merrick. She's critically ill.
I'll go at once.
They're waiting for you in the operating room, Bob.
Nancy, I don't think I can do it. Look at my hands. I can't hold them still.
Yes, you can. You're a doctor. Perhaps you became a doctor for this moment when you could save Helen's life.
Those specialists in Paris said this would happen, that nothing could save her when it did.
That was almost 10 years ago. You know far more than they did.
I'm afraid. Oh, Nancy, I'm so afraid.
They're waiting in the operating room, Dr. Merrick.
Well, tell them I... All right, I'm coming.
Bob.
Yes, darling.
I'm so glad you're here. So very glad.
You're going to be all right now. I'm never going to leave you again. I want you to try and sleep for a little while.
Bob, my eyes. I can see a little light through the bandage.
You're sure?
Yes. Yes, I am. What does it mean?
It means that the pressure has been removed from your eyes. As the days go by, you'll see more and more until your vision is completely restored.
It's almost too wonderful to believe.
And it means something else. It means that just as soon as you can get out of that bed, you're going to marry me and no more nonsense about it. Come on now. Will you give me your hand on that?
My hand? My darling, I'll give you my heart on that.
The curtain falls on the Gene Holloway adaptation of Magnificent Obsession. Our star, Robert Taylor, returns in just a moment.
Halo, everybody, halo. Halo is the shampoo that glorifies your hair. So halo, everybody, halo.
Use Halo shampoo if you want naturally bright and beautiful hair. For soap shampoos, leave a film on your hair. But Halo contains no soap, therefore leaves no dulling soap film. The very first time you use Halo, you'll notice your hair glistens in all its natural brilliance. The deep, full, natural color and luster comes sparkling through like sunshine through a clean window pane. And remember, even in the hardest water, Halo makes oceans of rich, fragrant lather. Halo quickly carries away loose dandruff, grease, and dirt. Needs no lemon or vinegar rinse. Because Halo leaves no dulling soap film. Nothing to hide your hair's natural beauty. Say hello to Halo and goodbye to dulling soap film. Use Halo on your children's hair, too. Get Halo shampoo at any cosmetic counter. Remember, Halo glorifies your hair.
So Halo, everybody, Halo. Halo shampoo, Halo.
Colgate tooth powder for a breath that's sweet and Halo shampoo to glorify your hair. Join in a warm welcome to Robert Taylor. Our thanks to Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer, producers of They Were Expendable, for making Bob's appearance possible. And to Universal Pictures, producers of Frontier Gal, for Lloyd C. Douglas' story, Magnificent Obsession. Thanks, Mr. Taylor, for a swell show.
Thank you, Frank. I'm happy to have appeared in the Colgate Halo Theater of Romance tonight. This is my first radio program since returning to Hollywood, and that old CBS microphone sure looked good to me. Next week, you're certainly in for a treat. Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer's fair young lady, Susan Peters, will appear in Leo McCarey's wonderful story, Love Affair. Her leading man will be one of the greatest young stars of today, Van Johnson. See you soon. Good night and good listening.
Bulletin for the Future. Next week, Charles Vandis' production of Theater Romance, Colgate Tooth Powder, Halo Shampoo, stars Van Johnson and Susan Peters in RKO's Love Affair. Originally produced and directed by Leo McCarey.
Last Minute Memo. 1 week following Van Johnson and Susan Peters in Love Affair, your Theater of Romance will present Humphrey Bogart and Joan Bennett in Warner Brothers' screen classic, One Way Passage.
These presentations of Theater Romance come to you because of your enthusiastic recognition of Colgate Tooth Powder for a breath that's sweet and Halo Shampoo to glorify your hair. This is your host, Frank Graham, saying goodnight and wishing you love, happiness, romance.
Mrs. America, here is a message from Secretary of Agriculture Anderson. He says, even though meat rationing has ended, there still remains the need for salvaging all used fats. Yes, ladies, there is still a shortage of fat for industry. And one result of this shortage is a scarcity of soap. So if you want to see a plentiful supply of soap in the stores, do save and sell all the fat you possibly can. Just remember, where there's fat, there's soap. Your butcher still pays 4 cents a pound for your used cooking fat. So fill a tin and turn it in. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.